Hi, everyone. It's Sandy Cruz from Sandy K Nutrition, health and lifestyle queen. And I'm here to show you that balanced living works. This is especially for all you ladies over 40. We will cover a range of exciting topics with many special guests, and I really look forward to this season. Bye for now. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Sandy K Nutrition, Health and Lifestyle Queen. Today's episode is going to be something very near and dear to my heart. Well, I guess the topic is, and it's all things thyroid. I have been wanting to record an episode such as this for many months, probably since I started. And this actually may fall upon my 1 year anniversary of since I started this podcast, which was in February 2020. I'm not sure when I'm going to release this yet, but I did find an amazing doctor, Dr. Lisa Coach, and she is out of Florida. And this doctor is going to go pretty deep on thyroid, why there are some issues with properly diagnosing thyroid disease, which I'm going to say is what happened to me. And for those of you who don't know my story, I had thyroid cancer when I was 41. So in 2021, it'll be 10 years since I had my thyroid removed. And life has been pretty different since I did have it removed. And I've made a lot of changes in my life, which is not necessarily a bad thing. And having my thyroid removed definitely changed things. But really, this episode is for all of you who suspect thyroid issues, who have thyroid disease, who have been misdiagnosed or not diagnosed, or are even unsure of what to do and where to go for help. So if there is one thing that you get out of this episode, it is going to be to advocate for yourself. And Dr. Lisa made it pretty clear as to why general physicians only test TSH. It's really because that's all they're ever taught in school. They're not taught all about all of the other different measurements. And so it's not like some big conspiracy to be against all these people who have thyroid issues. And unfortunately, there's many out there. But it is just a lack of training. So Dr. Lisa is a functional medicine doctor. And so she treats her patients very differently from most medical doctors. You're going to have to listen to the episode. Now, a couple of announcements I want to make before I get onto the episode is I would like you to send me a nice 5-star review with a few written words and then send me an email, sandy@sandyknutrition.ca, because I am running a contest for a $100 Amazon gift card if you do this. But you got to let me know that you do this so that I can see it and I can identify who you are just via email. And then if you're chosen as a gift card winner, I know how to get in touch with you. So please go ahead and do that. It's really, really important for us podcasters to get feedback and to have the reviews, or we get lost in the shuffle. There's, I'm going to say, millions of podcasts out there. So another thing I want to say is that my podcast was actually named in the top 15 of holistic health podcasts out there. I was actually, I think, number 12. So I'm pretty happy about that. I think it was from FeedSpot or something like that. Anyway, it was quite nice to hear that. And please do pass on my podcast to anybody who you feel might benefit from it. The majority of my audience is over 40. I'm sure I get women and men, because there are also men who have issues once they pass 40. And I kind of talk about anything alternative. I love all that stuff. And also, I am a holistic healthcare practitioner. I am a registered holistic nutritionist. If you do want to see me as one of the clients that I work with, I don't take on more than a few each month, but please do send me an email. We can have a free wellness chat and see if we're a fit. And then the last thing, if you don't already, please go ahead and follow me. I'm very active on Instagram and on Facebook. I have a private Facebook women's group, women only over 40, Sandy K Nutrition, Health and Lifestyle Queen. You can answer a few questions and be part of that group. I'm going to be doing some fun stuff this year. I really got to figure out what I want to do with that special group there. And then I also have a Facebook page, Sandy K Nutrition, and then at Sandy K Nutrition on Twitter and on Instagram. So now, without, what is that saying? Further ado, I would like to welcome Dr. Lisa Coach, All About Thyroid. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Sandy K Nutrition, Health and Lifestyle Queen. Today is actually an episode I've been waiting to do for a while, and I've been waiting to find the right person to talk about thyroid health. And I am so excited to welcome Dr. Lisa Coach. I hope I pronounced it right. Yes. And she is a naturopath doctor out of Florida, and her and I have been talking sort of through her assistant and everything for the last couple of months, and I finally have her here. So welcome, Dr. Lisa.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to get to chat today.
Oh, so am I. I am like thrilled to have you here because thyroid is, I see this in probably more than half, actually even three quarters of the clients that I speak with. And so, you know, maybe what we'll do is we're going to start with your journey, how you became a naturopath doctor, how you became so knowledgeable in thyroid health.
Okay, so I am technically not a naturopath doctor. I practice integrative medicine, but I'm actually a triple board certified medical doctor. I went through regular medical school.
Okay.
I know, right? I went through regular medical school and Emory in Atlanta, and I became a doctor and wanted to become a doctor because of my journey that started at age 15. So I was about to go off to camp. I had to have a physical. I felt fine, and they found an abnormality on my labs, and quickly we realized that I actually was diagnosed with leukemia. It's a childhood form, but I had to go immediately into pretty intensive chemotherapy for 3 years. And lost all my hair. It was a rough time, but I did well. And I knew on some soul level that there was a higher purpose for me having to go through this. I knew I was going to be okay. And right when my hair had grown back and I was about to start my junior year of college and I was doing well, I went in for my first ever GYN exam, and he found a mass on my ovary, thought it was a cyst. And when I woke up from the anesthesia, it had turned out to be hidden leukemic cells. So that started the journey all over again, and I had to go through another year and a half of chemo, and I went into heart failure from one of the meds because it was such high doses of chemo lifetime that I had been exposed to by the age of 20, 21. So that put me straight on my path without any distractions, that I was going to go to medical school to figure out why I got sick and to try to help people the way I had been helped. And interestingly, I thought I wanted to be a pediatric oncologist because that's all I knew. And one of the first people that interviewed me for medical school said, "Are you sure that's what you want to do? Be around, you know, kids that are getting sick." And I sat there and during that interview and I was like, "You know what? You're right." Yeah. The last thing I want to do, I want to prevent people from ever getting what I've been through. So, anyway, went on to medical school, and just kept asking why, and would get similar answers when I would diagnose, you know, when we would be rounding in a hospital and we would treat a patient a certain way. I would say, okay, but why did this patient get this, you know, or, but why are we doing it like that? And the answer would be, this is just how we do it. Uh-huh. And it would be over and over again, I hear that. And it didn't seem to answer the patient's whys either. So I kind of have forged my own path on exploring the why, which led me into functional medicine and fellowship training and all types of different integrative things.
Okay, that's quite the story. And I always ask the story because quite often that's what drives your passion to help other people. I know, you know, you and I spoke briefly before, and it's absolutely my passion. You know, my story is my passion. Yeah. So let me ask you this, because I think a lot of people, especially, okay, I have probably about 60% US-based listeners. However, I do have a lot of Canadian listeners as well. And here in Canada, functional medicine is not as well known. Can you just quickly, before we get into thyroid, describe what is the difference?
So traditional medicine is what has been taught in traditional medical schools. And most of the approach with it is diagnostic, which is pretty, you know, very useful and helpful. It's not that traditional medicine doesn't have an important place. And there are very much protocols of medication, interventions, or diagnostic testing that can be very helpful. But where traditional medicine has left a void is in a lot of the understanding of the deeper systems that go on in the body, like how they actually work and how they interplay with each other, along with alternative and integrative ways to treat that are more focused on natural things like nutrients and proper dietary interventions and maybe use of medications or lab testing that is not traditionally taught in medical school. So taking it just almost like a bigger picture view of systems, of how they interact, and of how to treat them, I would say.
Okay.
So functional medicine has, and unfortunately it was fellowships in functional medicine, fellowships in anti-aging and regenerative medicines, fellowships, you know, masters in these types of things. So it's kind of been all over the place to a certain degree, the additional education that, especially if you went through traditional school like I did as an MD, to learn this stuff. I mean, it was basically full-time. Like, I was almost, paying for another medical school education because it was expensive, and I was being pulled out of my office. But it is a lot of time because it's stuff in detail that you are not exposed to if you don't go out of the box of traditional training.
Right. So really it's out of the box. And I do know, like, even for lab testing, you know, the lab testing that a functional medicine doctor does compared to a regular physician is huge, like in terms of the nutrients and what's actually missing. So maybe this is a good segue to get into what typical physicians test for thyroid health versus what a functional medicine doctor would test for.
So we are mostly taught that TSH and maybe a free T4 are really all you need to look at. Or if we do screen for antibodies and you find something like Hashimoto's, that we don't need to repeat that because it doesn't, you know, that number doesn't change. Like, that's sort of some of the traditional approach with thyroid. Plus, there's a lot with traditional endocrinologists who are, I call it treating the piece of paper, not the human in front of them. So, you know, constantly trying to get this number in a certain range that they think is okay. So way back before I was diagnosed with Hashimoto's, I remember a patient coming in telling me, I'm all over this different type of thyroid where you really are measuring the T3 and then you're titrating it up and doing all this stuff that's, you know, measuring it based on your body temperature. And so it got me into looking at the levels in a lot more detail. And through my functional medicine training, we have a panel that includes TSH, free T3, total T3, free T4, total T4, reverse T3, and then both sets of antibodies. So it's a much broader vision than the snapshot that you can get just from looking at TSH.
Interesting. Yeah. So here's what's really interesting. So I have an endocrinologist that's, I'm going to say, pretty rare here in Canada. And he really looks at my symptoms. So, you know, we've got this big guide here, and the range, as you know, is vast for TSH. And what I've found just specifically with clients is that most of the women that I have as clients feel their best between a 1 and a 2, but our range goes all the way to 5. Now, this is in Canadian measurements that I think it's different in the US, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's different. Yeah.
So if we talk about the ranges, I can share the US ones.
Yeah. So maybe that's something even that I can put in the show notes, Canadian versus US. Because what I will say is that I know where I feel my best. And I have been, you know, if I go under a one Canadian measurement, I have very, very severe hyper symptoms. If I go over a two, I have hypo symptoms. So my personal range is really, really narrow in terms of how I feel good. And so maybe talk to me a little bit about what you do with your patients who, let's say, either don't have a thyroid or are more on the side of hypo. Like, how do you, I know those measurements, but what do you ask them? What kind of questions do you ask them?
Yeah, such a great thing. And I think it's amazing that you have titrated your own range so precisely. I will say it's more just a symptom, and people do get, I try to get them very connected to self and paying attention to how they feel at the different levels. It also can move based on stress and different things that are going on with the cycle and potentially menopause coming on board. Like, that can shift the need. Yeah, so there's a lot of variations and variables. But I'll ask, mostly it's energy. It is, you know, hair, skin, nails, foggy brain, the feeling puffy, recovery after exercise, obviously body temperature. So there are some clues that people may get. Most of my patients, as a general rule, I'll try to keep the TSH for sure under two. Mm-hmm. Some of my patients may have a TSH that's like incredibly low, 0.01 or point less, you know, whatever, less than even that. And they're not jumpy. They don't feel hyper, and their free and total numbers are normal. And so I am treating that human, not that TSH. They're going to feel really bad if I cut their dose down.
Right, right. See, and that's what actually I love. And I want to actually hone in on that, because it's really about looking at the labs and not just one measurement of TSH, right? Because that's a pituitary hormone, right? That's not even, can you just explain that a little bit?
Yeah. So I have like a little drawing that I show my patients, and maybe we can put this in the notes too. And it is that the brain makes TSH, which is thyroid stimulating hormone, that tells the gland to produce T3 and T4, that the T is tyrosine, which is an amino acid, and the number is the number of iodines, and that if the gland is working right, you make about 80% T3 and 20% T4. Sorry, I said that backwards. Let me just draw it while I'm talking. 80% T4 and 20% T3. And then what happens is in the periphery, which is liver and kidney and the bloodstream, you clip an iodine off the T4 to make T3. So that T3 is like the golden child that helps our metabolism, and that does most of the work in our physical bodies to make us feel good is T3. But what happens is a lot of times T4, which is Synthroid, levothyroxine, tyrosine, if people are taking medication, is not converting into T3 the way that it should. And if that happens, you may have a normal TSH because you have plenty of T4, but you're not getting the impact at the cellular level from the T3 that's getting converted. So the analogy I use is kind of now becoming old-fashioned, unfortunately, because I tell people, getting T4 to T3, it used to be catching a cab in New York in the rain, but now you have Uber.
I like it.
But I was saying, like, it's kind of hard to catch the cab, but if you get in the cab, which is the T3, you still have to find the building, which is the cell. There is a doorman at the receptor. There's a doorman there. But then there's all these people trying to block the doorman. But if you do get in the cell, you still have to go 100 flights up the elevator to the nucleus to actually take action. So there's in that nucleus on the top of that skyscraper in New York, right, is a lot different than TSH, which is coming from the brain. Like that, it's very far removed, and it is not a great symbolization of what's necessarily getting into the cell to take metabolic action.
Okay, I love that. That's so good, that the way that you describe that, because so I'm just going to speak on what happened when I first had my thyroid out. initially I was on T3 only because I had to go off all medications to do, I can't even remember the needles. I can't even remember. It was something to measure to make sure I had no cancer left.
Right, the radioactive iodine maybe.
I didn't do radioactive iodine, but they gave me some sort of a needle. A nurse came to my house. This is, okay. And the reason they put me on T3 only at that time was because it exits the body very quickly.
Yeah.
So then they put me on T4 only. And this is why I love what you were just talking about. So when they put me on T4 only, which seems to be the gold standard here in Canada anyway, that's all they give you. And guess what happened? I started getting all sorts of infections. I started having very severe issues with heartburn and cuts that wouldn't heal. It was just so bizarre. I was like, am I dying? Like, what is happening? Couldn't get off the couch, swollen and puffy. And so it's that whole conversion issue, right? Maybe you can talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So what happens when T4, which again is the 80% production from a normally functioning thyroid gland, or if you've had gland removed and you're given only T4, that is not as active. It works in the brain, but it's not as active in the rest of the body. So it relies on the ability of the body to clip off one of those iodines. And to do that, it's an enzyme called 5'-deiodinase, because it takes off an iodine. And that enzyme is very sensitive. So it doesn't work as well if you have, or it's blocked basically by certain toxins. It is blocked or underfunctions when you're deficient in things like iodine, zinc, selenium, and it's also heavily impacted by stress and the adrenal function. So when that conversion enzyme is underfunctioning or not working, then the T4 has to go somewhere, and it goes into something called reverse T3.
Right.
And I tell people that is like, and this is also kind of an older analogy too, and I'm not that old. That's like the key and going in the ignition, but it won't turn the car over. Right. So like we could just say it's the key going into the door, but it won't open the door.
Right.
Because it fits the receptor, but it doesn't activate anything.
Oh, I like that.
So it blocks.
Yeah.
It blocks the whole thyroid path, the whole, benefits of activating the thyroid receptor.
Yes. And actually that probably makes a lot of sense, because during that time I was going through a hell of a lot of stress. So there you go.
Yeah.
So I had to actually very much advocate for myself, because it was not common. And I don't know how common it is now when you're first starting thyroid treatment in the US or in Canada, that a doctor will put you on both T4 and T3. But
it's,
I don't know.
Definitely not common.
So you really have to advocate for yourself, because I did, and I pushed, and you know what? It was definitely life-changing for me in terms of how I felt. So I started to feel much better, I even went through the route of trying desiccated. I tried compounded. Nothing really worked, and in the end, the only thing that worked was the synthetic. And so, even a lot of... I would always go the holistic route, but, I needed to get off the couch. I need something that worked for me, right? So
yeah, I'd say a lot of people, especially in early Hashimoto's, if you haven't done a lot of the work with the gut and other dietary and other functional medicine work, the desiccated can actually set off the antibodies, and people will have a reaction. They'll react to it and not do well at all. So there was a period in time when I had to only be on synthetic as well, but it was compounded T3 and T4. And then as my body got calmed down and my titers of my antibodies went down, I could tolerate desiccated again.
Desiccated.
But only certain type, yeah.
Right, right. Okay, so I need to ask this. Why? Why do all physicians test? Because I feel like it's a vicious cycle, right? So somebody goes in, sees their physician, the physician tests TSH, the person that's going in says, I have no ability to get off the couch, my hair is falling out, I am puffy. I've got all these issues. Oh, wait a minute, but your TSH is within range, so you're fine. So why can't physicians just dig a little deeper?
I think it's a couple of layers to that question, to the answer to that question. So okay. One is we're not taught, so they don't know the details. Like most of what I learned about thyroid was definitely not in medical school. So that's the first problem. So it's not that they don't want to necessarily, they don't know any better.
Okay.
They haven't been taught that. And the other huge piece of it is I don't think docs in general are opposed to trying desiccated, especially. But what happens with desiccated a lot is that it will make the TSH look very suppressed, or it will do weird things to the TSH, because as a general rule, T3 suppresses TSH a lot more aggressively than T4 does. So then they're left with these results that are kind of all over the place and they're chasing. So they may, like, then it's like, okay, well, then let's up the RMR or let's decrease it, and the patient's not feeling great, and the labs are never settling down, and then finally the doctor's like, you know what, screw it, go back to synthroid so I can get your levels stable. Like, that's what I see a lot.
Okay, okay. And then I do want to ask about iodine, because everybody always, like, just... For me, just with clients, I'm always like, what? Just hang on a second with the iodine. You know, let's just make sure other things are balanced, other minerals are balanced before we throw iodine into the mix. So what are your thoughts on iodine and taking iodine and types of iodine for the thyroid? Because there's iodine can be pretty toxic depending on the source too, right?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things with that too. You have to be, I would say, pharmaceutical grade supplement for that is safer, because you want to make sure it doesn't have, you know, that it's not chemicals or just unpure sourced form of it.
Yeah.
But the other is the best is a blend of iodide and iodine. So it's a pretty stable ratio that we recommend. And what I typically tell patients is you can definitely overdo iodine and get in trouble.
Right.
The vast majority of the population is actually deficient in it. And we just started testing. It's not a great tool, but because the best way to test iodine levels is actually like a 24-hour urine, which is, it's annoying. So it's kind of expensive and it's annoying to collect your urine. And what I was finding was everyone was deficient. So I pretty much stopped doing that. We now do spot checks of just serum iodine levels. And most people still are on the low side. What I'll typically do is just replace it only maybe for a few months. So I don't stay personally on iodine all the time. I may go through like little periods of time where I'll take it or not. But if you've got a good iodized salt, like a good mineral sea salt, you may not need to take it daily. And you're right, people can overdo it, and it can go in and cause either hyperthyroid type symptoms or just make, again, managing the thyroid tough, because it's related to all the other minerals as well.
Okay. And then what about iodine and cysts? Because can't they help with cysts in the body? And like, you know, sorry?
The breast, anything with the breast.
Yeah, so when I had my thyroid out, I also had a fibroadenoma, which is it's like a benign tumor. I also have a breast cyst. I have like all these things, like, you know, and then obviously I looked into my own genetics to figure out what the hell's going on. And found, you know, I am susceptible to thyroid. And so I have to do a little bit more, I guess, to keep myself healthy. And so that's good to know. Now, what about iodine and other minerals? And, you know, should you, I don't know, like, what are your thoughts on balancing other minerals before you bring in iodine?
Okay, so I haven't done a lot of that, like insisting that people kind of test the other mineral levels.
Okay.
doesn't mean that in some people maybe that would have been helpful. What I see is more I go into the toxic side of it. So fluoride and chlorine and chloride, they're all in the same column in the periodic table as iodine. So a lot of the iodine deficiencies come from those compounds. So interestingly, like if I have someone who swam a lot, like mm-hmm. college swimmer or something, they almost always have thyroid problems, almost always. And it's the chlorine that has knocked it off. So they desperately need iodine. But what happens is if you replace iodine too quickly, which may be some of what you've seen before, it's not necessarily the imbalance of other minerals from what I understand. It is the displacement of these toxins, and then you go through a level of detoxification of fluoride, of chlorine, of chloride.
Right. So I think of it as like parking spots, like for a car, right? Like, does this make sense? And so because they're all halogens and they all look the same, your thyroid can't differentiate between what's the what. And so they all kind of take up spots. And then you want the iodine to take the spot, not the chlorine, right? Does that make sense?
Right. Absolutely. And then what happens is the iodine, you give enough iodine. So this is why sometimes just taking it for, you know, 6 months, 3 months, a year is enough to get like the backload of the chemicals and maybe why people end up going toxic. I don't know that we really know that. The only way to know is an individualized measurement of iodine levels and or of these halides, which are, it's hard to measure because it's expensive, but I just do it based on symptomatology. So I'll put people on usually like two a day, about 25 milligrams of the combination of iodine for a few months, and then I'll back it off to one, because I was taught at one point that one of those at a 12.5 milligram dose is the equivalent to what the Japanese take in seaweed. Oh. So, which is super interesting, because that's one of why they started really studying iodine was because the Japanese seem to have a much lower incidence of breast and thyroid issues. And so they were able to sort of tie that to the seaweed consumption.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Is that the iodorol that you use?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I've seen that. Okay. So let's get into how adrenal health is actually tied to thyroid health. If you can touch on that, because there's so many stressed out people out there, right?
Absolutely. So one of the things we already talked about, which is the conversion of T4 to T3 is definitely impacted and suppressed when you have an imbalance in your adrenals, whether it's hyper stress or whether you're crashed. It can impact that conversion either way. It also can impact at the doorman that we were talking about. So at the receptor, if you have a lot of stress, if you have high cortisol, if you have very tanked adrenals, you can get thyroid thyroid receptor response that is suppressed. Almost like insulin resistance, if thyroid resistance can be impacted by adrenal function that is not healthy.
Okay. Yeah. So that's why it's so important too for, now I'll get into women over 40 who are in perimenopause, or even women who are over 50 who are already in menopause, and stress and thyroid health. So maybe we can even add in, how does estrogen, because I know estrogen, lowering estrogens can have a play in your thyroid.
Yeah, so it is a whole, they all impact each other. And I'll say that one of the ways I like to view it is another one of my analogies. It's funny, I'm sharing all of
them. I love it.
is I describe it as a stool of vitality, and there's four main legs. And okay. So one of them is the thyroid. One of them is the adrenals, one of them is your hormones, and one of them is the number and status and function of your mitochondria. And what happens is if any of these legs are under functioning, then the other three legs have to pick up the slack. So, for example, with adrenals and being stressed, if that's not working as well, a lot of times you'll see the thyroid under function because it's having to jump in, and it's also not converting, like I said. what happens at menopause and at perimenopause is that your ovaries are packing up and they're going to be done, and you are still supposed to have hormones until you die. So the gland that takes over production of hormones at the point that you hit menopause is your adrenal. People, a lot of people don't know that. So this little tired, stressed out gland that's already been working hard for you and it's already burned out is being asked to do more. So many times at perimenopause, getting closer to menopause, you will literally knock out two legs of your stool at once because the hormones are kind of done being produced on their own and the adrenal can't handle it. And then the thyroid is just going to go up because it can't meet the demands, the metabolic demands, without the support of those other hormones.
That is such a great way to describe it. And so really, when you have women come into your practice who have symptoms of thyroid, you know, how would you treat somebody? Let's say I came in and I'm tired, I am gaining weight, I'm 50 years old, and, you know, I know everybody's unique, but, you know, what are some of the first things you'd look at?
Well, we would do the detailed blood work like we talked about at the beginning. And if they've never been diagnosed with low thyroid or been on medication, I typically will try nutraceuticals first, because a lot of times I can get them straightened out with a combination of things like tyrosine, ashwagandha, and glandulars and different minerals, iodine, those types of things. So we will try natural, but if the patient is that person I just told you about that has knocked out their thyroid, their hormones, and like they are just really, really not feeling good, I will put them potentially on a supplement that helps conversion of T4 to T3, a stronger glandular adrenal support, and then I'm going to put them on whether it's a desiccated thyroid a compounded T3 and T4, like we will play depending on what I see going on with them. So,
Okay. And that's actually very different from a lot of just general physicians. Very different. just because I know from my experience and so many women that I talk to, it's very different. So I like that. Now, I actually wanted to ask about iron. So I'm just going to talk about my issue is a little different because I don't have a thyroid. So everything that I do depends on my medications. They're doing 100% of the work. I don't have any gland left. Some people still have a little bit of a gland or whatever. And I have found that now I'm 51, but my iron levels were starting to go down. It was actually not even my hemoglobin, it was my ferritin. And so what was happening is my TSH was going up. And then from there, I was getting lingering symptoms. So not like full-fledged hypothyroid, but lingering. So how does iron come into play in all of this?
In order to have ferritin, which is the iron storage molecule, your body has to work pretty hard because it extracts it from food and it takes energy. So I think that is the main connection, because the energy of digestion and absorption and then allowing the ability to hold on to iron in a storage form, it requires metabolism to be working, and that involves thyroid hormone. So if you've got an under-functioning gland, or if you have leaky gut, which a lot of people do as well, your ferritin levels are going to be down. And then the body has to work harder. When you don't have ferritin, it has to work harder to extract each iron molecule out of the food right at the minute you need it, instead of kind of casually taking it from the storage pile.
Right. Now, how does it differ? Because let's talk a little bit about the opposite, which would be Graves. Now, Graves is an autoimmune disease, and that's the opposite. That would be hyperthyroid. So I guess stress is also a factor there. Does that make sense?
Anytime there is something autoimmune, stress is involved, and typically the gut is involved. A lot of times there's also chronic fatigue type virus is involved. But with Graves, it is typically an earlier presentation where the body mounts this immune reactivity because a lot of environmental toxins resemble thyroid tissue. And if they get in the bloodstream, the body doesn't know what it is. It mounts an immune reaction, and then it can get confused and attack the gland. So there are cases where it first goes after the gland and turns into a hyper response where you're producing way too much thyroid hormone. Sometimes that will eventually burn out and then turn into an underfunctioning gland as well, even just on its own without treatment. But those symptoms are pretty obviously different. You know, you'll see the patients who have the very pronounced eyes, the thyroid eye problem, where they look very bulging. You'll see sometimes sweating, a lot of anxiety, palpitations, racing heart rate. So very different clinical presentation than the typical low thyroid that we see so much more commonly.
Okay, yeah, I know. I've been there before, and it's like the worst. Just now, what would you recommend? We're gonna have to close this off soon. For a woman who has thyroid issues and is going through menopause, because as you know, women who are close to 50, or I here in Canada, I think it's 51 is the average age of menopause. I'm not sure about the US, but you know, our hormones are kind of all over the place. So that's like one of those legs. So that you were talking about. So, you know, I know for myself, I'm on bioidentical progesterone. I'm trying to keep everything kind of as much balanced as I can, but I'm a holistic nutritionist. I have a little bit of knowledge. So what would you suggest for any woman going through menopause to try and keep stable and keep thyroid levels stable?
So the number one thing is to make sure that you have adrenal support, which I know that sounds weird, but that is kind of like the rock through the insanity of menopause.
Yeah.
And so if you are really, really wired, taking some ashwagandha, if you're exhausted, potentially taking some kind of glandular support for that gland is key to keeping yourself sane. The thyroid at that point, then I strongly just recommend finding a practitioner or finding a way to measure your levels, because up to 10 years before you stop having your period, your progesterone can drop and you don't want to remain estrogen dominant. That's when you would put on a progesterone cream, like what you're doing, to kind of try to keep things a little bit more balanced.
Yeah.
Most of the time you will need thyroid support during that window as well.
Okay. That's good to know. Now, is there anything else that you would like to add, Dr. Lisa?
I think just stay educated, keep asking questions, keep listening to awesome, you know, resources like what you're listening to right now.
Yeah.
And there more and more practitioners are waking up and learning and willing to listen.
Yes. And question, how can we find you? Where can we find you?
So I am on Instagram at Dr. Lisa Coach, and Facebook the same, Dr. Lisa Coach. And my website is spectrawellness.com. And you can check out my book, Get Lit, on Amazon.
Oh, I love that. And what is this book about? Just so
it it's just a simple Q&A format on how to live your best life. And there's simple answers for fatigue and brain fog and stress.
Oh, I love that. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming today, Dr. Lisa. I appreciate it. And, you know, we may have to do a part two if I get a lot of questions.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for having me. It was great. And everybody have a great day.
Thank you. Join me next week where I cover off more exciting topics. I hope to continue to engage you and excite you and show you that living in your 40s, 50s, and beyond can be exciting, balanced, and helpful. Bye for now.